Welcome to Legal Talk, a monthly conversation about the American legal system with Minnesota Supreme Court Associate Justice Gordon Moore.
Well, good morning, Justice Gordon Moore. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Rich and listeners. I'm doing as well as can be expected on this lovely St. Patrick's Day morning. It is, you know, that time of year yep. where my grandfather Moore asserted that he had Irish ancestry, particularly this time every year. That was okay. a predictable part of our March 17th discussion. I'm not sure. I haven't done the 23andMe evaluation to see how much of that was. Right. It's clearly British Isles. It's clearly Scottish, Irish, or English. But it was always an event in our family that was met with a lot of gaiety. So, and in St. Paul today, the parade. And they should have a very nice day for it.
Oh, it's a little windy, but it should be a lot of people out turning out for it. I mean, it's going to be a really nice day out there.
So that'll be fun. But went to a judicial investiture on Friday afternoon out in my former judicial district, the 5th District in Southwest Minnesota, out in Pipestone, Minnesota, which is, you can see South Dakota from there, and it was a good therapy. We'll talk about that a little bit in a moment, but it was a good visit out there. We sworn a new district court judge, Kayla M. Johnson, taking over from my former colleague Terry Vagert out in Pipestone, Rock County, way west. And it was 72 degrees in Pipestone.
Wow!
And then you could see the thunderstorms coming from the south, come driving home. It was just kind of odd, surreal. And then we went to St. Peter on Saturday for the Mankato Symphony Concert at St. Peter High School that my son is part of on a rotating basis, and it was freezing cold.
Oh.
It was just, kind of love the continental climate in good old Minnesota.
But March is, the weather's weird in March in Minnesota. Can't decide if it's late winter or early spring.
Yeah.
So we get a little bit of both.
We do. It's fickle, and we're going to see more of that this week, reportedly.
Could have as much as 8 inches of snow on Wednesday.
Paul Douglas, my wife, was telling me in today's paper, said don't take those stakes marking your driveway and sidewalk out quite yet.
But at the same time, I mean, it's one of those Colorado snows where we're going to get 8 inches on Wednesday, and by Saturday it'll be gone.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, it's state boys basketball tournament this week.
Exactly.
So, you have to expect there's going to be weather.
Is it a hockey tournament blizzard? Is it a basketball tournament, wrestling tournament? It's always something. But
It is.
Speaking of the hockey tournament, you were, thank you so much for being part of KYMN's hockey broadcast all year long. We really, really, really loved having you be a part of it. But you got to go up to St. Paul.
I did. Yeah. Unfortunately.
Well, you go to St. Paul all the time.
Well, true for work. But my sort of bucket list includes announcing a game from the Xcel Energy Center press box.
Right.
Didn't get there this year because of the press of work. When Warroad lost to East Grand Forks in the 8A tournament, I figured that was going to push Northfield up to probably a 3 seed, and it did. I was gunning for that 4-5 game on Thursday, but I was, Joe Moravchik stepped in, and I really enjoyed working with Joe. I was able to get to the consolation championship game at Mariucci Arena, which was a good consolation prize as far as press box goes, frankly. And had a lot of fun working with Joe and, of course, Jimmy. And what a great finish to an outstanding year. Yeah. I mean, a 4-0 consolation championship win. The Raiders looked strong and confident and, fifth place. I mean, there are 3 teams that end their year on a winning note in this business. And it was a lot of fun to watch that team evolve. And it was just fun to be sort of a small part on the periphery of that team the entire year. And our competitors that day with Northern Lakes had one radio guy, I don't know, from Crosby Arrington or Aiken or something, and he had all his boards, and we had 3. So we enjoyed the banter, and I think that Rich might be a good format for continued hockey success.
I would love to see that happen. I mean, it's what we did this year was we split up the boys and the girls, and Joe took the girls' games and you took the boys' games. But you know, Joe did some boys' hockey. I think you stepped in for one girls' game as well.
I did, yeah, I did. But Joe is, I mean, his daughter played college hockey.
Two.
And you know, I had two kids play hockey at a youth level, one up to, you know, junior of high school. I did some coaching at the lower levels, but boy, Joe has been there all the way up through and really knows the game.
He used to run the New Prague Hockey Association, and yeah, he's seen college hockey up close with both of his girls. I don't know if you got a chance to hear his daughter during the first game at
from I did.
The, she was fantastic.
I did.
Too.
It was Lauren, right?
Lauren.
Lauren was outstanding. That was so much fun. And he sent me a photo of the three of them in the booth there. And what a fun opportunity to be able to broadcast a game with your daughter.
Yeah. And that's really cool.
Yeah. That makes, you know, Rich, the local radio station and the effect that it has on the community. I mean, that's just a small example of it. Having that kind of, you know, presence up there, when we walked in to check in with the media people, it was, you know, it was just a lot of fun to say, hey, we're here from Northfield. We're here from KYMN. And they smiled and they know we're all volunteers.
Right.
You know, this is, you know, Joe and I aren't doing this for any type of payday at all. We just want to support kids, support the community and help the radio station.
Not only did Joe volunteer, and this is no reflection on you at all, but Joe sent me a thank you note. Say, hey, thanks for letting me do the tournament. That was Joe's a prince of a guy, and we're gonna you know, we've got you on a regular basis. We're gonna have Joe on a regular basis too. We're gonna do some more stuff with Joe as well.
Right.
So,
well, my thank you note's coming, Rick.
Your thank you note is right here, sitting here to talk to us about what's going on with the Supreme Court right now.
We're kind of in that interim period. You know, oftentimes, usually, actually, the third Monday is right after the conclusion of our oral argument weeks, and we had a particularly challenging array of cases the past 2 weeks. I mean, we had, you know, first degree murder cases, really heavy facts, really tough issues, and then some very, you know, complex civil cases that involve some real nuance. And so, yeah, by last Thursday, I think the court was pretty exhausted. And then in my personal family, we had to say goodbye to our last family pet, our cat Snowflake, who had been with us for 20 years. Quite a run for a cat. And, you know, my daughter, who sort of has been the cat's primary caretaker up until the past 3 or 4 years after she's moved to an apartment, you know, looked at me and my son and said, "Dad, it's time. This, you know, poor Snowflake." I mean, we were living with her, and I was avoiding the conversation. Yeah. Frankly, I was engaging in that typical male, you know, avoidance mechanism.
Right.
You know, everything's fine, nothing to see here.
Yep.
And she just looked at me and she said, "What are you doing?" And so, I just want to compliment Dr. Kelsey Dubay and the staff at the Cannon Valley Vet Clinic for tending to our family on Thursday.
Right.
Just care, compassion, thoughtfulness. It's a hard process, but it was made somewhat more manageable just because of the decency that their staff expressed to us. And Snowflake walked that rainbow bridge last Thursday, and it was pretty quiet in our house on Friday morning.
It's hard.
Yeah, it is hard.
That's a member of the family. Don't make any bones about that.
It is, and particularly with you know, the transitions our family has gone through, with kids going to college and parents passing away, and houses being sold, and this cat's been kind of a constant, and I don't know if you read the book A Man Called Ova or saw the Tom Hanks movie A Man Called Otto.
I actually saw my wife loves Norwegian film, and so I saw the original Norwegian movie.
Yes. And so the relationship between the cat and Ova is an important motif in that novel, and I felt a little bit like that, frankly, yeah. like this cat kind of worked her way into yep. me
yep.
in a way that I did not really anticipate. Yeah. I mean, kind of an evolution. Frankly, she drove me nuts for most of the first 10 years. She came from a farm north of Worthington. Good friends of ours had kittens, and we had a circumstance involving another cat moving on. And so my wife allowed our children to pick out two, and Snowflake was the last of the group that's still around, and she's walked with us for a long time. So yeah, I mean, it had to happen. It was the humane right thing to do. You know, she wasn't going to give up. We had to step in, but it was nevertheless kind of challenging. So it's been kind of a reflective weekend in a little ways, but you know, back to the reality of life and work, and you know, we move on.
Well, our condolences to you and your family, because it is losing a family member, no question about that. And it's anyone who's the only people who scoff at this stuff are the people who've never had to put a pet down.
And, I agree,
and I mean, it's brutal.
Yeah, it is. It's not. I mean, intellectually, I knew fully well what was going to happen, but what I wasn't prepared for was the emotional effect that it would have on our family.
Yep.
And so the, you know, staff at Northfield High School that work with my son have been caring, compassionate. My wife has had a number of people reach out to her on Facebook. And so, it was charming when I walked up to the radio station this morning and saw a friendly face staring at me from the radio station.
Our office therapy dog.
Little. I needed a little pet therapy this morning, so Ginger, the office dog, provides that, and there she is.
She's
dutifully right outside the studio door,
just kind of keeping an eye on you, Gordon.
Right.
Exactly.
Yes,
right.
Right.
You you brought in a newspaper clipping that's it looks kind of interesting to me.
I wanted to talk just a little bit about this because. You know, I get questions oftentimes when I'm, speaking to civic groups, community groups about judicial selection and about, you know, the sort of the worry that fundamentally some people have. It's so easy to become cynical given, you know, the state of affairs right now where people assume everything is rigged, everything is, not on the up and up.
Right.
And so last weekend, I believe it was last weekend or late last week, one of the members of our Judicial Selection Commission, Cherie Curry, wrote this column in the Star Tribune that I would really advise, recommend people take a look at. And it's called Judicial Selection in Minnesota Isn't Rigged. She's a member of the Minnesota's Commission on Judicial Selection. And, you know, she talks about how she became part of that group many years ago. And, you know, this Judicial Selection Commission is comprised of people who are attorneys and maybe even more importantly, people who are not attorneys.
Mm-hmm.
And Cherie is an at-large member of our commission. She's an African-American female, and she discusses how the process works and how the judiciary is directly affected by decisions the Judicial Selection Commission makes. We've talked about this, but just to reiterate, it is a nonpartisan group. There are 22 members from across the state selected by both the justices of the Supreme Court and then 27 by the governor. So 49 total members. Some of them are just specific to a particular district. Like, for instance, last Friday I was in Pipestone. That's the 5th district. There's an attorney and there's two attorney and two at-large members in each district. But then, most importantly, there are these folks who are statewide members of our Judicial Selection Commission. One of those is our very own Packy Mader here in Northfield. And these are people who devote their time and expertise and energy to ensure that we have people that are being sent to the governor. The committee is required by statute to recommend to the governor no fewer than 3 and no more than 5 nominees for each vacancy.
Sure.
And they are required to consider statutorily fitness, ability, skill, knowledge of the law, and the factors that relate to why somebody would or would not be a good judge. Nothing to do with politics. It's about fit, and it's about ensuring that the judiciary reflects our community.
Mm-hmm.
Sheree's column cites the nonpartisan Brennan Center for Justice that examined 60 years of court data across the country and concluded this, and I think this is really important. A diverse bench also promotes public confidence in that the judicial system is fair and objective. When the judiciary includes all voices and perspectives, members of the public are more likely to trust that theirs will be heard as well.
Yeah.
And that is so important. You know, I mean, you are asking in criminal trials a community to stand in judgment of somebody, and if that jury doesn't reflect the makeup of the community,
right,
is there a perception that that verdict that's ultimately rendered is going to be fair? I mean, that's a work in progress. We've talked about the composition of our juries,
mm-hmm,
but under the governors in the state of Minnesota, since the Judicial Selection Commission has been adopted, and this is a nonpartisan thing. This is the judicial selection process. This commission on judicial selection was actually an offshoot of work that former Governor Al Quie, a Republican, mm-hmm, from Denison, obviously, was involved with, ensuring that, you know, the people that were picked for the bench weren't just on a list of, you know, frankly, the governor's buddies and financial supporters,
right,
but were reflecting what the community needed. And every governor since that time has followed the Judicial Selection Commission's recommendations almost without exception. There have been a couple, but very few, and that's Governor Perpich, Governor Carlson, Governor, mm-hmm, Ventura, Governor Plenty, mm-hmm, Dayton, Walz. You know, many people, like Governor Walz, has talked frankly about the fact that he's not a lawyer.
Yep.
You know, his friends, I mean, he was a teacher in, yep, Mankato. I mean, may have known some lawyers in the Mankato community, but he wasn't associating with them. And Governor Ventura, similar thing. I mean, he obviously had a career far outside the,
right,
law, and you know, as a television personality, a wrestler. And so, you know, they're relying on people who know something about the law and know about what makes a good judge. And so the rigorousness in the selection process just cannot be overestimated and can't be overemphasized. The commission identifies candidates who have the integrity, maturity, health if job-related, maturity, judicial temperament, diligence, legal knowledge, ability, and experience, and community service. And Sheree talks in her column about her personal look for judicial candidates who will display that they have empathy and understanding towards litigants, especially people who can't afford an attorney, that are appearing in court by themselves,
right,
people whose first language may not be English.
Right.
And the point that she's making is that the system works best when the people in the robes understand the lived experiences of those who stand before them in every aspect. And the final column of her column is, that's why Minnesota's judicial process isn't rigged. It's fair, thorough, and committed to excellence, fairness, and diversity. Sheree is the co-president of the National Association of Black Journalists in Minnesota, and also covers news and does writing. And so, you know, that column, I thought, spoke to a lot of things that have been on my mind regarding, you know, the judiciary and, mm-hmm, ensuring that our judiciary does have the trust and confidence of the community. Back to the investiture in Pipestone that, yeah, I drove out to. There was a time in Southwest Minnesota where the judiciary was all male. I mean, and it, yeah, wasn't that long ago.
Yeah.
The first woman appointed to the bench in the 5th Judicial District from Mankato to South Dakota, Redwood Falls and Marshall down to Iowa, wow, was in 1991. Only 1991.
Holy moly.
Yeah. And now the 5th District bench is at least half women.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, with Judge Johnson starting today in Pipestone, every judge west of, if you drew a line from Fairmont up to St. James, up to Redwood Falls, every judge west of that line is female right now.
Wow.
And that is such an incredible transformation.
It is. Absolutely.
Over the past 30 years. And it's just one of those small reflections of how far we have come as a judiciary.
Remind me about the makeup of your court, the Supreme Court. Obviously, we have our second female Chief Justice in a row, but how many women are on the bench?
Four of seven.
Four of seven, okay.
Yep, we are back to a majority female presence, composition of our Supreme Court. Obviously, Chief Justice Hudson, Justice McKeag, Justice Hennessy and Justice Gaetis, all from different backgrounds, but all women. And, you know, that we were the first Supreme Court, I believe, to have an all female majority back under the Rudy Perpich era. Mm-hmm. And Rosalie Wall was the first woman appointed to the state Supreme Court, I believe, in 1975, 76, something like that. And so, things have evolved. And, you know, I can assure you that at no time during conference do I hear my colleagues say, you know, well, you know, this is my gender, and so this is how I'm going to vote on this. That's not how this works.
No.
But you're bringing, again, as Sri talks about in her column, lived experiences, and that does make a difference. And one of the things, just to be fully transparent here, one of the diversity aspects Sri talks about here is the geographic diversity, you know, on the appellate courts, which, you know, that's me. I mean, me and Justice Hennessy are referred to in this column as, you know, district court judges from outstate Minnesota, Justice Hennessy from Stearns County, me from Nobles County. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not traditionally been a breeding ground for members to go to the Supreme Court. So, you know, reflects a little different priority. Every governor brings their own set of priorities and values, and, you know, the pendulum does swing back and forth between Republicans and Democrats, and occasionally an independent, depending on who's elected as governor. Mm-hmm. But I think what has continued to be the case is a nonpartisan commitment to the rule of law and justice in the state of Minnesota, and that is a widely held belief. And I think it has contributed a great deal to us avoiding some of the issues that we've seen in other states with partisanship infecting the court system.
You have, having been through this a couple of times, the vetting system is, or the vetting, the vetting process is extensive. Is it? Can you kind of walk us through how that all works?
Yeah, the application to become a judge is daunting. It is, you know, I haven't looked at it recently, but what I remember, it was, you know, 20, 25 pages where you are identifying people who you have had cases against. They want to talk to your opponents to find out how you were as a lawyer to deal with. You need to name names of judges you've appeared in front of so they can tell the commission how you behaved and how competent you were. And you also have the opportunity to provide references. And it's at least 10, if I recall. And I thought it was really important. They were, you know, they didn't want references just from other attorneys to talk about, you know, they didn't want people in your law firm talking about what a great lawyer you were. It's important to hear from people who are not lawyers.
Yeah.
In terms of how you treat people because of the importance of that. And so when I applied, I mean, I had a reference from a court interpreter, from the director of our crisis center, Women's Advocacy Center in Southwest Minnesota, law enforcement, probation. I mean, all these stakeholders, because the judicial system works because people work together as a team.
Yeah.
You know, the judge sits on the bench and issues decisions, but there's a ton of work done by all the partners to get to that point. And, you know, if you have a courthouse or a county where things are not in sync, where there are disconnects between people on that team, you generally see dysfunction, lack of productivity, strife. And conversely, when things are going well, you know, the decisions are hard, but everybody understands each other's role in it, and we end up moving forward that way. But yeah, what you find out later is that the people that are doing due diligence on candidates are assigned a candidate. And so, sure, they talk to the references you provide, but then they want other names that you didn't provide. They say, tell me tell me what the rest of the story is here.
Yeah.
In the old Paul Harvey parlance here.
Exactly.
What more do we need to know about this person that we aren't getting from this application? You know, is there something behind the curtain here? Because obviously people are going to put their best foot forward in an application. Right. You know, people don't like to talk about, you know, the case that went bad or the warts or whatever, wherever they are, you know, and there's always something. You know, the personality conflict with that attorney, or, you know, the one case where the judge didn't like the, you know, the arguments or something. And so, you know, they go through and they do a lot of diligence, Judge candidates also sign releases to the Department of Public Safety and the Department of Revenue. So they get access to tax records. Yep. They want to know if you're paying your taxes and filing appropriately. They want to know what your driving record is.
Sure.
Are you practicing what you're preaching? I mean, are you lecturing to people in the courtroom about speeding and, you know, driving, you know, with too much to drink? And, you know, are you doing that yourself?
Right.
And so they look at all those things, and they don't tell you about exactly what they find or what their conclusions are.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you interview for a judgeship, you go before the Judicial Selection Commission initially, if you're selected for an interview. And that is a rapid fire star chamber kind of atmosphere where there are maybe 10 to 20 people in the room peppering you with questions.
Wow.
And you are, you know, it's a little bit like, you know, those congressional hearings you see where there can be some tough questions. People are not shy about pulling the Band-Aid off and asking about, you know, X, Y, or Z.
Yeah.
Through that process, the commission comes up with the finalist list, and that goes to the governor, and almost without exception, the governor picks from that list.
Okay.
And then, but there's more diligence that's done at that level, because the governor's office then is involved, and they are asking as well. And then there's questions of fit, and, you know, we had a prosecutor the last time, should we have a public defender appointed this time? Those sorts of things. And so that makes it for a very exhausting process as a candidate.
Yeah.
If you get to that point, you first of all, your name is public. If you're a finalist, it's a public public information. So people know about it. And, you know, in small communities, there's very little anonymity. People know, you know, who their judges are and where they live and who their kids are. And so, you know, it's just that process, and it's a process that has served us well, and I just wanted to make sure that people, if they hadn't seen Ms. Curry's column, have a chance to look at it. Granted, it's a little self-serving for me to be touting it, because obviously I'm a product of it, but I think it speaks well to the things that are important for our judiciary.
You're the person on this radio station who's going to explain this stuff to us, so self-serving or not, I'm thank you for this. I appreciate it.
The other thing I wanted to just briefly comment on, I get questions about judicial ethics all the time. Mm. People ask, you know, what's happening? I mean, they're hearing things, they're seeing things, and they don't like what they're hearing and seeing. And in Minnesota, judges are subject to the Code of Judicial Conduct, which is a published guide in terms of what judges can and can't do, when they should recuse, what types of gifts they can't accept, what type of reports they have to make, and if a judge violates the Code of Judicial Conduct, they can be subject to disciplinary proceedings. Mm-hmm. And if that proceeding goes far enough, it can get to the Supreme Court. And we are going to have, unfortunately, a judicial disciplinary case coming before the court this month. I don't want to talk and can't talk about it at all, because it's very much an open question. But it's a public proceeding. I mean, this is no behind-the-scenes thing. If you look on the Supreme Court calendar, you'll be able to see it. And, you know, we have had these occasionally, and the Supreme Court ends up deciding, you know, whether or not to sustain recommendations made through a process. It is, and it's just a reminder that the Code of Judicial Conduct has some teeth. The Minnesota judiciary is subject to it. And, you know, these are thankfully very infrequent proceedings. This will be the first one that I've had in my 5 years on the court, thankfully. And, you know, but we have that, and we have two attorney discipline cases in April as well, because the Supreme Court does have original jurisdiction over the discipline of attorneys and judges. So just to comment on that. Next month, Rich, I would like to wade a little bit into a couple of areas that I am a little hesitant to even get into, but I feel that they're so important that we should at least talk about them. They're okay. not issues that are going to come before the state Supreme Court, but they are issues that are likely to come before the United States Supreme Court. The first is the birthright citizenship question.
I would love to talk about
which
that.
I think may be the first of the Trump executive orders that will get to the Supreme Court. And then the second thing that has become noteworthy in the news is the effort at using a 1798 statute to deport a person who had been involved in protests at Columbia University, a green card holder, to revoke that individual's green card and send that, and the person's in immigration detention right now as a result of it, for engaging in protests over Columbia's stance regarding the Hamas-Israel war, a very controversial, difficult thing. And that is a test case. It's clearly not going to be the last. And how this 1798 law pertains to modern use of immigration tools is a little bit of an untested question. I expect that to be before the Supreme Court as well. That involves some profound freedom of speech issues that go to the core of our Constitution.
Okay.
And it is generating a lot of academic discussion right now, a lot of online discussion in terms of people's thoughts and feelings on that. The feelings are raw. I can't engage into my personal views on that. That's wouldn't be appropriate. But I think for people to understand the checks and balances in our country, these are two cases coming forward that are, you know, there's a number of, you know, court decisions that have been issued at lower levels involving the administration's executive orders. But these are the first two that I think are likely to get to the merit stage of a case before the U.S. Supreme Court. So we'll need a little more time to talk about those, and I'll have to decide how much I can say. But I think just as listeners, astute listeners of this show know, there's a lot happening in Washington, and it's worth keeping an eye on.
Yeah, and I appreciate that very much, because those are two things I'd love to ask you about and wasn't sure I could.
Yeah, so. it's dangerous territory for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, we appreciate it. And we always appreciate you being here.
I love being here. Your fundraiser, Rich, at Eminem was great. Jane and I got down for that. And
thank you for coming,
I was
by the way.
Yeah,
you classed up the joint. We really appreciated it.
I don't know about that. I was Joe Moravchik maybe did, but I was there kind of in the periphery. But what I just appreciated is the community turnout there from all walks of life.
It was really something.
It was really a testament, Rich, to what Stan and Wayne and Jeff and you and Jeff have continued. Stan and Wayne obviously founded it, and the importance of local journalism in a community to enhance understanding and public debate and discussion. The importance of that. I think the community spoke well.
Yeah, it is really rewarding to see the community sort of reinforce the feelings that I've had about this place, and for you to come out and show your support, that was greatly appreciated, sir.
It was a fun night, some great silent auctions, and I understand maybe not the last of fundraising opportunities.
There will be a brunch on Saturday at the Grand, where the Grand is going to donate a certain amount of the proceeds to the Tower Fund, and we will be there. A bunch of us from the station will be there, and there's going to be some live music, and it's going to be a good time.
No, that'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
A lot of fun.
All right. Justice Moore, as always, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Rich. Thank you, listeners, for listening.
Justice Gordon Moore will be back again next month, the third Monday of April, as always. And again, we've been bragging on this a little bit, but man, local radio stations. How many local radio stations out there have a show co-hosted by a Supreme Court justice? We are very fortunate around here. So thanks for listening, and we will talk to you again next month.
This has been Legal Talk with Minnesota Supreme Court Associate Justice Gordon Moore. If you have questions for Justice Moore or would like to suggest a topic for future conversations, email us at contact@kymnradio.net.